Good morning. I'd like to call the Planning and Development Real Estate Committee to order. You have before you an agenda, one item, an information item. And first on this agenda is the approval of the minutes. So a motion. You may. Mr. Benjamin has changed.
Shall I move them first?
Well, please vote changes, and then we can, if you can incorporate.
Okay. I do have some changes to the minutes. If you would go to section C, bottom of the page, page 331, last paragraph, Mr. Benjamin Scott. Instead of saying does not offset Metro Matters, change it to does not reduce local contributions to. On page 4, the paragraph that begins Mr. Yule, I will change the word motioned to moved, and that the board authorize staff, not approve staff. In the middle, the other one, the paragraph under D that starts, Mr. Benjamin stated that, the third line stated that there should be a positive requirement that states that the benefits of this transfer, and then should say to, and pick up from the bottom, WMATA and the region at large will be evaluated to be commensurate with the value of the land, period. The statement doesn't match what it is it said. If you go down two more paragraphs to where it says Mr. Bodenheimer stated, so Mr. Bodenheimer stated that there is flexibility. I must admit I cannot understand what that sentence says. Can somebody explain what it is that we're trying to say there?
But you understood Mr. Bodenheimer when he said whatever he said.
I don't know whether he said what he said because I don't know what it says. I don't have any idea what that statement says. Does anybody know what that statement says?
Perhaps we should ask Mr. Bonner.
Well, he's responding to Mrs. Hutchinson. He responded that there was flexibility in this policy, in the policy that we can make.
I don't know what an operationally accessible thing is. I guess the point I'm trying to make here is, it would be a lot better if our minutes were clear and understandable and we knew what it was that was being said. And I guess this brings me to a broader issue. I have a couple more comments. And the broader issue is, if we truly believe that these minutes are important, we need to put a little bit more effort into making sure that they are articulate, thoughtful, and read carefully and understandable as well as accurate. If we don't do that, then there's no point in having minutes and we can just dispense with the whole thing. But this is a continuing issue, and I feel sort of sad because I'm always the one that gets up here and starts saying, here's some changes to the minutes, and I think it reflects the fact that what we're receiving is not what we should be receiving. There has to be some higher quality assurance. If we go to the middle of the information item on page 5, again, Mr. Bodenheimer stated ridership associated with Dulles. And then there's this thing that says riders from Loudoun County to Tysons and being replaced at Tysons coming inbound. I don't have the foggiest idea what any of that means
it's
either.
Not a sentence.
I have a suggestion.
We'll
finish it.
Okay.
You finish.
I don't have to finish. There's several more, but they're of the same nature.
Is there? Yes. Yes, let's send them. Mr. Tato, can you tell me if the staff has any other way other than the script to record what is happening? Is there a recording?
Well, I think those are options we will look at, and we will, working with the new secretary of the board, I will discuss with her what types of recording devices and something we can use to improve the minutes.
Okay. And with, yes, go ahead.
But for committee minutes, who is actually responsible for committee minutes?
Actually, for the committee minutes, it is the head of the coordinator of the committees.
Right, so it's from the particular staff section.
We might have to reevaluate that in discussions.
Well, but normally you're not. Are they working simply from notes taken during the meeting, or are they working from recording the meeting?
From a recording.
So, and how long is the recording maintained?
I'm sorry, I'm going to ask the question.
So in other words, for the meeting we're discussing here, it's possible to go back and check and hear Mr. Bodenheimer again and adjust what's said, for instance?
Yes.
Okay, so that's what I thought. So, you know, the good news is there's a record that can be gone back to correct this. I think Mr. Benjamin's comments nonetheless stand. I wonder if we should be approving this, or perhaps we ask this to be brought back to us at the next meeting.
That I would not like to. Well, I would think that with the recommendations that are made, it would be better to that we go back to the recording and make sure that what we have recorded there, and then bring that back.
But may I suggest, if I may, that what's important here is that the minutes be reviewed by several people on a policy level, and if they can understand them, and if they know what it says, and if they think it reads right, that's good. If it isn't reviewed by a couple people on a policy level, I think you end up with stuff like some of these statements that everybody looks at and says, well, what does that mean? And we, the board, shouldn't be the first person's people looking at it saying, what does that mean?
Madam Chairman, let me just say, you know, making minutes from a meeting where people are talking all the time is not an easy thing to do, and I recognize that. And, you know, there's a sort of a level of specificity and accuracy that maybe never will attain in minutes that you do in some other things. And once you start going through them, at some point you have to decide how fussy you want to be. Nonetheless, I think Mr. Benjamin makes a really important point that this is the record of what we do. And you could decide that actually you don't want to keep such minutes, that the only minutes you'll have are of actions. The board voted this way or that way. There are legislative bodies that do that at the state level. But if you're, on the other hand, going to keep a record of the discussion itself because that is deemed to be important to the way you function as an organization, then you do have to make sure you meet a certain minimum level, which means that when you read a sentence that's an answer to a question, you got to know what that answer is saying. So, you know, I think I have sympathy for staff who have to do what is a really tedious job, but I think it is an important point that if we want to keep records of this kind of detail, we do need to make sure they're accurate.
Okay. This is being returned, and we'll come back for approval at that. Okay. The first item is the information item on the bus corridor part.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Public transportation has been and is an important part of this region's mobility plan. Over the past few decades, we've provided rail service, bus services, and paratransit. However, rail has been the big brother, I believe, for the past couple of decades. In late 2006, we had a regional bus conference to look at ways to improve bus services throughout the region. And since I have arrived here in discussions with board members, this has been a key objective of this organization. Today, we want to discuss with you the next step forward in developing priority corridor networks of metro bus throughout this region that would make it an equal brother to the rail system, and I believe provide additional mobility and choices for commuters in the Washington, Virginia, and Maryland region. And with that, I'm asking Nat Bollingheimer, our Assistant General Manager for Planning, to make this presentation to you this morning.
And we're going to sort of do a tag team format here. Jamie is going to lead this. I will join in, and Milo Victoria will as well, as they touch on points that relate to how the plan proposed here affect the operational issues that Mr. Victoria sees on a daily basis throughout the region as he manages our 1,500-plus fleet. So, Jim.
Good morning, everyone. I'm really pleased here today to talk about a network corridor plan that we want to present to you. This is, I think, going to be a vast improvement for how we provide service in this region. Purpose of today is to actually propose a regional network, priority bus corridors, to improve the service for existing riders. We want to have this policy discussion related to the considerations, and we need your input as we move forward with this plan. The end of this will describe an implementation plan linking actions that will come to you in the future as we coordinate with the various jurisdictions. A little bit of background, next slide. I won't read everything that's on here, but bus plays a very major role in this region. The chart on the left shows rail between Metro Rail and Commuter Rail serves about 55% of the people on public transit in the region. Bus carries about 45%, a combination of Metro Bus and all of the local bus carriers in the region. We are a major carrier of riders every day, throughout the day, morning, evening, night, weekends. On the right-hand side, we tried to show that the bus has a farther reach. Bus goes beyond the railroad. The railroad is sort of fixed. You know where it is. You see where the buses are. The black dots show the very dark black dots show the rail stations. The gray dots are actually bus stops. So you can see that our reach is much greater in terms of how we serve the region. The region itself, on the next slide, the region's growing. You guys know it's growing. It's happening in all of your jurisdictions. Jobs are going to be up between now and 2030. Jobs are going to be up 34%. Population is going to be up 24%. Households are going to be up. All of the facts say it's growing. As our region grows, we've got to be in a position to respond to that. We face challenges on the bus side. We've got overcrowding. We've got slower and slower and slower travel speeds. We've got problems with keeping on schedule, and our expectations from our riders are above what we're providing today. And as our service deteriorates because of congestion, it really makes our service and our response to our customers less than we would like it to be. So we're developing this plan to improve that. Last month, we talked about rail and the fact that our rail ridership in the region is going to grow, and that we're going to have demands on our rail to provide more rail cars by 2015, 2025, and 2030. Here today, we're talking specifically about the bus side. And the bus side has the capability of responding to these needs in the shorter term. Doesn't have the long-term procurement, doesn't have some of the requirements to support that the rail does. Next slide. We've done a lot of bus studies. I've been here 11 years. We've done a lot of bus studies. We've looked at a lot of bus service. We've improved a lot of service. We've done the regional, but we list them all here. I won't read them all. We've done a lot of bus studies. It says we need more and better bus service. We need to be more reliable. We need a fleet plan. We need a network evaluation. All of those things, we've done enough plans. It's time to put it together in a program and do action. That's what we're bringing forward today. Earlier this year, we've had the challenge from our chairman to look at reliability, to look at service, to actually come for a plan that's a short term. So we're beginning that plan today. The right side of the chart's got a lot of information. Again, I won't go through it, but it says that two-thirds of the growth about where people want to run buses are on our existing network. And about a third of where the demand is new markets. So you'll see that impact as we roll our plan out. I'm sorry, I can't see this very well on the screen. It's actually better on the slide in front of you. However, this is our regional plan. One snapshot's worth 1,000 words. This is 24 corridors. We operate 171 lines. This represents 14% of the lines. On these red lines, we carry 50% of our bus riders, 220,000 bus riders a day. That's presently on those services. We've looked at around the region and said which ones are candidates for our priority bus corridor. We've built upon the experience that we have on some of the successes we've had. We put a light priority corridor on Columbia Pike. Less stops, express, new buses, a dedication. We've seen a ridership growth on Columbia Pike of about 50%. Did the similar thing with Rex. We've seen the ridership increase. We did a similar thing on Georgia Avenue in the district. We've seen a growth of 1,000 riders in less than a year, and we were only providing peak hour service out there. So we built upon that express and said, now we look at our corridors. Let's step back and make it into a program. Let's not just pick one, the squeaky wheel at a time. Let's look at a program. Where should they be? We looked at all of our routes. We selected where they should be based on performance of that route, overall ridership of that route and in the region, whether or not the land use is changing, is that region growing, is there plans for things to happen in the next few years. We wanted certain levels of service. It needs to be a frequent service, needs to have a lot of riders throughout the day, not just a peak hour service, so that we can make improvements in the middle of the day, weekends, and so forth. We've also done a lot of working with our jurisdictions. It comes out of all those plans I talked about. So all those plans that have been bought in leads to these 24 corridors. The corridors As we do it, I said they carry 220,000 riders a day. That's 70 million bus riders a year. Also incorporates 246 line miles of service that we're talking about. How do we want to do the corridors? The next slide. Later this month, we're putting in service improvements on the 30 line. We've learned a lot by doing that study. Went out to the public with a plan. They handed our head to us. They said, that's a dumb idea. Don't do that. We worked with it. Sorry. We worked with the jurisdiction. We worked with the locals. We said, okay, what's important out there? And they said, okay, this. And it took us about 6 months to come up with a plan that they liked. We kept through service. We put in a rapid bus service. We kept a local feeder service in there. We went back to a public hearing. 50 people showed at the public hearing. There were two complaints. Everybody was for the plan. It's how you do, it's the best way to improve a service. They're seeing improvements in other areas, and they want to do it. So as we do these 24 corridors, we want to do the same thing. We want to improve the peak hour service, put in a rapid bus. We want to protect the local service by keeping the local ones through there all day so nobody loses service. You want to deal with our family of services, as you've heard from our rapid bus corridor network studies that we've done. What happens is everybody benefits. Sorry. Wait. Next one. But this is important. Characteristics. I already covered the left-hand side. This is going to affect a lot of people. If we see a 5% ridership on these lines only as we do them, we will add 10 more million bus riders a year, 14% over our existing ridership. We think that's somewhat conservative. We've seen larger increases than our existing. I don't have a real model to predict it, but we think that's conservative. These, the top of the corridors, the characteristics, again, shows that the growth in the region is happening on these corridors. So the households on these corridors are going up by 14%. The population of these corridors are going up by 12%. The employment on these corridors are going up by 14%. So we've matched the corridors to where the growth is happening. The bottom half, in terms of the characteristics, again, we looked at corridors with a lot of riders on it. They average almost 10,000 riders a day on the 24 corridors that we're doing. They average riders throughout the day, off-peak weekends, and in the evening. They carry a lot of people. 55 people an hour on a bus going up and down the street is a lot of people. Usage of bus, we tried to analyze what's happening on the corridors. The corridors average 8% of the people that are riding up and down the corridor are on the bus. Less than 1% of the vehicles on that corridor are buses, but more than 8% of the people on that corridor are on the bus. Some of those corridors are as high as 16-17% of the people on the bus, and the buses on those corridors range between 1-2%. So we're trying to look at moving people through the region and working with the DOTs, not just to move cars. The last one is interesting to me. 6% of the people on these corridors are transferring to rail. That says 94% of them are all bus riders. They could be transferring to another bus, but they're primarily bus corridors and bus riders on these corridors. This is an improvement for our bus riders in the region. Next one, please. Tied to making this work is roadway improvements, facility improvements along the roadway. Because we're the second most congested region in the nation, our buses, our traffic, our roadways keep getting slower and slower and slower. In order to make people get out of their cars and in buses, you're going to have to make the bus more reliable and run faster. That's what we've learned on Georgia Avenue. Georgia Avenue is showing us a 20% savings in travel time for riders. Just by taking, that's without the roadway improvements, that's by taking the bus and doing skip stops and laying a service on top of it. The roadway improvements on top of that are going to do a tremendous aspect in terms of reliability, keeping those buses reliable every single day. And so we've identified along these corridors improvements. And what you see as we lay out this plan is what we really want to do is get specific site improvements. And we want to get it to each of the individual DOTs so that if DDOT is doing a roadway improvement on Benning Road and they look at their plan and go, there's a corridor plan on this. What does it mean? Is it time for signal improvements? Is there bus stop pulling and pull out that can be incorporated into a plan that they're doing, whether it's an intersection improvement or whether it's as wide as doing a whole lane for a busway? So we can identify the improvements, but we're going to have to rely very heavily on the DOTs to carry it forward. But we need to get into their details of their planning about what it is we need and that will help us that they agree with. Next one. That all adds to traffic congestion. What we've seen in the last 8 years, our bus speeds have really gone down. So it's cars, and we're in the same traffic. But bus speeds in the suburbs have decreased 30%. In the city, they've gone down 15%. On a 30-minute ride, we're seeing 8-9 more minutes to take a bus to get from one end to the other. That's what we're seeing. That affects all of us and affects traffic. So that's what we're trying to get around. Part of that's going to be bus lanes. Part of that's going to be how do you get through a traffic light sooner? Do we move all of our bus stops to the far side so that the bus gets through the intersection at first before it loads and unloads people? How do we do skip stop? How many stops should be out there? On Columbia Pike, we went from 45 stops on the expresses down to 14, 15 bus stops. Really increases the time. Makes customers walk a little farther to get those expresses, but they've shown through those experiences that they're willing to do that, as long as they have a way to come back. The last point on this point, here's what we've hit you with in the last few years. As our buses slow down, we come to you every year and we say, we need more buses, we need more service for running time and overcrowding. Running time and overcrowding has become the same thing to our customers, because as the buses get slower, they do get more crowded, they bunch up, and the customer says, my bus is crowded, I can't get on it, and the third or fourth one back is now empty. We might have the right service out there, but they can't make it from end to end. So every year we come to you and say, we need more money to make our bus service reliable. If we work for a program on the corridors and improve all of this, actually we can delay some of that in the future. And so if we, instead of coming over the next 6 years and saying we want 100 buses because of traffic congestion to keep the buses as slow as they are, if we say put it into a program, give them express buses up and down the corridor, work with the DOTs to make that happen, the investment is still there. What will really happen is we're going to put it into a better service. Or if we get efficient enough, we can say, don't spend the money on buses, spend it on the roadway improvements. And that's what we've got to work with the DOTs, and we've got to work our way through that process. If not, we'll be back here every year saying our service is getting slower, we need more money, we need more capital.
And this is, I mean, this, I think probably everyone knows, is really going to be the battleground for the next, you know, for the next 5 to 15 years. And, I mean, Jim has hit the nail right on the head. And I think all of you know the competition for space at the at grade, whether it's for a streetcar, light rail, or for buses, is going to be the key challenge. There are a lot of existing users of the streets right now, a lot of them single-occupant vehicle drivers. You can show that the more people will benefit from the improvements in the allocation of space to transit than are impacted by taking away space for single-occupant vehicles. But everyone who's a current user of a car on one of these corridors will feel themselves as being impacted. There are cultural issues within the state DOTs, within any transportation organization, about vehicle, looking at vehicle throughput, maximizing vehicle throughput as opposed to personal throughput. So there's a communications issue. We have to communicate the benefits to riders. We also have to communicate the bus, the dollar impact, because one thing you're going to see on the next page is dollars associated with this overall program. And I'm not going to
turn yet.
Don't turn yet. I want to. Before you see those numbers, we want you to be thinking about all the deducts that there are from that. Because as Jim has already pointed out, if you increase average operating speed, you're reducing your requirement to invest in new capital, because you get more turns, more routes run a day by a bus. You don't need as many buses. It saves operating costs. The more people you get out of cars into buses or any kind of surface transit, the fewer improvements are going to have to be made to highways. I mean, it may be diffuse benefit, and it may be, you know, some statistical and a percentage of the overall region's investment in roads, but there is a savings there because there is less wear and tear on the roads regionally, and that's another deduction. In addition, we've got in the appendix, and we probably won't have time to go through all of those, but there's a host of other benefits as well. They include fuel savings, energy security, global climate change, enabling private development. So there's a whole suite of benefits that we'd like you all to be able to talk about as we go forward with the program, and that we're going to be developing information that you all can use, and we're also going to be presenting this information at the Transportation Planning Board and at local planning agencies, so that there's as many people as possible equipped to talk about these issues and to go to decision makers in your host jurisdiction.
Let me just say a couple of things. You can see the passion from these two gentlemen on this, and to me that's really refreshing because it is so important in looking at it from an operational point of view. What operation manager wouldn't want less wear and tear on their equipment, because that's part of what happens here, because there's less stop and go, even though we are going to be carrying heavier loads. Again, there's less wear and tear on our equipment. There's also the issue of faster running times. And from a customer's perspective, you know, if I can get there, if I can cut, you know, 5-10 minutes from my trip, and still go to where I want to go, you know, that to me would make a huge difference. So, you know, you can understand the passion here.
Sorry, I can carry away sometimes. As we've done, seen the improvements on Georgia Avenue and Columbia Pike, we've seen 15-20% decreases in travel time. As LA did a rapid bus and they incorporated more of the highway network into it, they saw it even better improvement in terms of savings time. Instead of 20%, they saw a 30% savings in travel time in some of their corridors. And their ridership growth responded to that even a higher need. So it becomes a package. What can we do with the bus service and what can be done on the local roadway networks? Now we'll go to the next slide. Top of it is we've laid out here that we really want to do this because it takes some time. We want to do 3 to 4 corridors a year. That's what that shows out. On the attachment where I listed all the corridors on page 26, we've actually laid out a plan that we'll get feedback from the jurisdiction. But the message here is we can do 3 or 4 of these a year. This year we'll plan for next year. Next year we'll implement those while we're planning for the following year. So that is the plan that we think we can handle. It matters how much we can do in terms of staff effort, how much MELO can support from bus operations, how much we can do from marketing, and it lays it out. That's what we're going to do. It comes at a cost. If we implement all these corridors by 2013, we're talking about another $25 million of operating expense for bus services. That includes the buses, the mechanics, the back support to do that. Also includes supervision to manage these services. Because it's a family of services in terms of express and local, it takes some more managing, but it allows us to make it more reliable source service. So if the local is affected, we can keep the express running. If the express is running, we can keep the local service running. So there's always a backup service for the customers that are out there. It also comes with a capital cost. $26 million is our estimate. We've included everything in there, bus improvements, 135 buses that we've been talking about since Metro Matters began, garages for that. We've talked about signage, doing improvements along the busway in terms of shelters. We've also put in here roadway improvements. There are estimates about where that comes from, and they're basically based per mile. It's not a DOT estimate, but it's a lot of money. And we put it all in one category. Whether it falls in Metro or the locals, we just want to say that's what you need to put the program together as a whole. Cost and benefits. I'm almost done. Cost and benefits. We think that this package, we know this package affects half of our riders within a 6-year time frame. By the end of this, we'll get riders saying, how come I had to wait till the end? Similar to a Georgetown reaction to a railroad. Improvement of all of our bus services and qualities in the corridors, similar to what we're doing the 30 lines. I think it also puts us in the right place for development patterns that are happening. We're going to be in front of all the marketing that's out there, and it allows us to coordinate the investments with roadway improvements that the DOTs want to do that we would like to do for safety improvements and to make the service better. It does require additional buses. It does require additional operating expenses, and it's going to require a bigger input from all the stakeholders in this region. People around this table, the DOTs, the local supervisors, it's the state DOTs, it's going to take a commitment. We'll get back to that in a few minutes. Next few slides. The layout is sort of a policy consideration. This is what staff, we're recommending this is how we improve the bus service in the corridor. We're waiting for some feedback from you. We put it together as a plan. It's not like, well, next month I'll roll one out and I'll come back to you. The month after that I want to roll one out. This is where we should be, and we can be there in 6 years. as we move forward, we'd come back in an annual plan. We'd come back in September and say, here's what we're doing this year. As we roll out our budgets, we tie it back into our budget plans, but it does go to an overall six-year plan. It also, it's our decision, we can do 3 to 4. My opinion, it's fairly aggressive. Could be faster, could be slower, but that's our plan. It does require buses. We're prepared to move forward as it's laid here. You know, we need some feedback on the overall plan, and then we'll come back with the aspects of it. And we also need to determine whose role, board's role, staff's role, in advocating the roadway improvements, talking to the DOTs. Who's going to be the spokesperson to say, this is what we need? Is it me? Is it the board? Is it John? We need some feedback about how to make that happen. And again, I'm almost done.
Yeah, our jurisdiction is writing letters together to the Transportation Planning Board and asking for items to be added to their work program to study and to publicize, and that's something we know there.
Next one, if I can. What we'd come back with is we've got a step we have to get the board approved. It's called the Best Bus Network Evaluation Findings that we were committed to do when Metro Matters was funded. We were able to move forward with the first 50 buses, but the other 135 buses couldn't be done until we've done that. We finished the study. We actually presented it to the board, but it has not been adopted as a document. That needs to get done. That would be the first step we need forward to move forward to buy buses. We'd come back with an annual priority plan. We're doing the 6 years. This first year, we're doing 16th Street. We're doing the J lines. We're doing the 28 line. We'll lay that out for you, and we'd show the next couple of years. What's the funding strategy? We're paying for this with more money. We're doing it on existing resources. It's an improvement. It's hard. But we're going to come to you and say, this is what we can do. This is what we need, and we do that in September. And then we've got to approve the aggressive plans. We want to come back to you in November and say, here's all the highway improvements. On this roadway, we want a bus lane. On this roadway, we just want the signal priority. On this lane, the real key is to have bus pullouts or bus pull-ins or fewer stops on all of the lines, those types of things, so that there's an official plan that we give to you, we've got in our hands, we can put in the DOT that's detailed enough that they've got something they can react to. They can improve it. They can say, well, you know, I'd like them to say they need more of this. But we want them to integrate it into their plans. Excellent. It also requires a shift in regional thinking, and it really deals with strategies related to what the role is of carrying people in a region. Are we still going to focus on cars, or are we going to focus on people? And I sit around this table, and everybody will say people as I go out to the DOTs. As I go out to DOTs, it becomes sometimes a different focus. I'm sorry. I got to be careful. And I think it's time. I think it's the right time for a change. And this can be the beginning of making that happen. So that it also then ties into land use. And what is the need for a land use, and is this corridor growing from a land use? Does the transit service support it, whether it's, you know, in these cases, our rapid bus or the railroad? We've done a lot of focus on development and rail, very little on development and bus. And this can be the beginning of that. So that's the end of my presentation. I wanted to lay all that out, get your opinions on all of this, and tell you where we think we're going in the next 6 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. I do admire your passion. I hear it. It is a good presentation because I think it hopefully conveys that when we talk about Metro, Metro is a transit organization, and transit is not just rail. Too frequently, the larger public, as well as policymakers, focus so much on rail when we know that the people that we are serving are often beyond the rail capture. And so the presentation kind of at least speaks to some of the philosophy that many of us sit here with. I wanted to make sure that as you conveyed it, I heard that you have been in contact. You have has the plan been reviewed by all the jurisdictional?
Yes, it has. The original plan was the bus study that was adopted by you, the input to the local jurisdictions. This was presented to the JCC. We did get some comments back from them. There's going to be some haggling about which corridors go first and which ones go second. But generally speaking, the corridors are in there. We had some suggestions from the JCC that additional corridors should be added. A lot of them are growth corridors. What to do with the reaction to the BRAC changes that are going on. They're really not in here. This is responding to the two-thirds of the improvements that are existing services. So those are some of the comments that we got.
Madam Chair, I have also met with all three heads of the DOTs in Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia to discuss the concept and components of this, including bus-only lanes, buses on shoulders, and some of the jurisdictions have already appointed staff to work with us. It's just in the beginning process, but that is underway.
And the other is the other side of that. I know in our area we are doing a major bus study, and that is a reciprocal coordination that's going on. Yes.
Madam Chairman, I have a whole host of questions, which I'm going to hold off on asking. But I really would just like to say to start off that having now been here a little over 10 years, I've heard a lot of different discussions about bus over the years. I got here as Metro Bus was just being saved from falling apart completely. It was enough prospect of it potentially collapsing that my jurisdiction created a plan to create a bus system for what would we do if Metro Bus was, ceased to exist. To seeing a more positive approach to bus services as part of what we do in this agency, and a lot of conceptual discussion, including the regional bus study done some years ago, which really was very high-level conceptual, suggestive, but, safe. Not too risky, didn't propose too much, and we never seemed to go very far with it. So I have to say that in the now 10 years that I've been coming here, this is the best presentation on anything related to bus that I've ever seen. Notwithstanding that I have lots of questions about it, I am grateful for the passion that I heard in, this morning from the staff people who given this to us. I do believe that this is one of the most important areas for us to concentrate on because it has been a striking contrast between the rail side, and I don't just mean in this building. The region has understood for four decades that it has a partnership around a rail system that ties the region together. The region gets that. People in local governments, the public understands that. We have never had that kind of understanding about the bus side of our business. And although I'm, of course, an advocate for extending the rail system and think that we need a lot more rail services in this region, rail will not go everywhere, and it certainly won't go everywhere in the next 20 years. And we need to do a lot more in the next 20 years. And this kind of approach is going to be one of the most cost-effective things the region can do to expand its capacity in moving people around. And so I just wanted to start off by saying I'm really pleased to see that we're now developing an actual plan for implementation. This obviously isn't all the way there yet. And I know just as Ms. Hughes was describing when they went out for a plan on one line and they thought they had it, they had to go back and refine it. Same thing when we started Pike Ride several years ago. We thought we'd studied a lot. We thought we had it right. We went out to the public. We got some comments that made us go back and refine some things. And it wound up being better when we were done. And that's going to be true of this, this much larger plan as well. But it is a plan that is clearly serious about doing something. Ultimately, doing this is going to depend upon a regional commitment to fund what's here. But I think this is a really important first step. So I'll hold my questions while others ask theirs, but I did want to say that at the outset. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I'll speak for one of those DOTs here at the table. But I wanted to thank the chairman for his leadership this year and encouraging staff to get this plan out here because I think you're right. This is probably the best presentation we have had on a future bus implementation for the region. I want to thank the general manager for taking his experience from the West Coast and bringing some of those ideas here and getting us focused on something that I think we can do in both the short term and the long term. I think it's a real stark contrast to the rail presentation we got a couple weeks ago when I know as a state DOT that contributes substantially to Metro, choked over some of those numbers we frankly looked at about Metro Rail future expansion. I think this gets us closer to something that we can all get our arms around. We can make priority decisions about what we want to do next. I do have a lot of questions, and I think you started to answer a few of them, but I want to kind of push on one point. You were talking about future growth in the region. I think one of the opportunities we have is better coordinating the work that we do here about transit service planning with what a lot of the work that we do over at the TPB. Thinking about highway growth and trying to serve as a relief, planning the system as a relief to the highway growth that we anticipate over the next years, as well as the development growth, the development corridors as you identified. We know where people are going to be moving. We know where the housing units are going to be coming online over the next few years. How does this match up with that? I guess there was a comment made about improving service to existing riders, and I think that's a laudable goal, and we should probably start there. We want to make sure that people that ride Metro continue to ride Metro and benefit from this investment. How do we balance that goal against the need to attract new ridership? Because the region's not getting any smaller. We're already the third worst congested region in the country. How do we attract people off, out of the cars? I mean, is that going places that we currently don't go, or is it just improving service on existing corridors? I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts.
I guess one of the contrast is that we have as part of our charter to do the region's transit planning, and so does the Transportation Planning Board, but the Transportation Planning Board gets its funding through state DOTs, and I think historically it has been a little bit more representative of a highway-focused approach to solving the region's transportation problems. I think we want to be much more closely integrated with what the TPB does. It's a regional forum, and I think that this is why you see us scheduling the rail demand forecast and capacity presentation to the TPB coming up in the next month, and we want to take this presentation there as well. And we'd also like to get the questions that you are all asking and that we're all asking asked also at the TPB. There's some things that we could do, there's analyses that we could do, but if it's Metro's analysis, it seems like it's, you know, we're doing analysis to just to motivate for ourselves. If it's something that the region asks for at the TPB and the TPB staff, it's not that we couldn't do it, it's just that it's got a more regional scope there. So I entirely agree that we need to knit together the capabilities that we have here and try and find ways to bring that more to the center of what TPB staff are working on.
Just as I look around the table, there's a few of us there that spend some time over TPB on a regular basis. I think if we could really kind of pull together that caucus, that group of folks kind of speaking, and kind of pushing this agenda, I think it'll help really. We talk about taking it to the region. I think that would really help us. There are a lot of people interested in what happens at TPB.
We know how time-consuming it is to draft letters and requests for support on policy initiatives, and I think one of the ways that we can help you all in that is to be preparing communications that you all could use to consider jointly signing, but to give those to you and to provide information that helps you make the case.
Mr.
Benjamin. I did want to thank the staff for, and especially Mr. Hughes, for what was really a very impassioned and thoughtful and excellent presentation. It's a very, very good one, and as many people have said, long overdue. I think we've heard that what is before us is a development and transportation challenge, not just a transit issue, and that this is very broad, and that you are looking for not only board involvement, but board leadership in making this a regional issue that we can all work on together, and I think you've already heard that the board is more than happy to work on this with you. I guess we need to work out exactly how, and that's one of the requests you've made. In the broader context of our moving forward with all of this, I was trying to really understand the significance of the approval that you're asking in June. That is, since we are going to clearly do much more work on each of the corridors and each of the annual plans, what's the significance of a board action approving this plan or program in June?
Well, I actually think the bus network evaluation that report that we're asking you to approve in June or to adopt in June basically gives us the flexibility to purchase expansion buses if we come to that. That's a result or a need. It's identified in the plans that we do, and it gives us the opportunity to acquire buses out of the Metro Matters funds, which you can't do right now.
So you're saying that the significance here is not necessarily what we approve here, but it's the fact that we'd release money for 135 buses that is in Metro Matters?
It would still be a board authorization, a board approval for that, but we can't
purchase. Yeah.
That's correct. But as far as adopting or endorsing the plan that we put out today, I mean, I think that, you know, to a certain extent, it's a it's putting the board's imprimatur on a plan and saying this is, you know, something we're comfortable with, and we're, you're making a statement that you want to see staff moving forward on this. We don't know exactly how it's going to be implemented, but that's what you want us to be.
Conceptual approval is what you're talking about, broad conceptual approval?
Yes, and in June, it's a specific item that, as I said, is a hurdle we have to get over. Metro Matters, when we approved it, specifically said we had to do that study, and the board has to approve it. We just haven't gotten there. Okay. Come back and then approve this plan in September with specific elements that happens this year, and then every year we'll roll out detail of the plan. Sort of like a bus fleet plan. It's adopted by a plan, sets a goal as to where we're going, and then everything we do from then on in, whether it's procurement of buses or whether it's annual operating plans, then fits into an overall plan.
If, in fact, what we're talking about is releasing funds, of course, subject to board approval in Metro Matters, I guess one of the things I would ask of the staff is, since we've already spent or already authorized all of the Metro Matters money for replacement buses, and we're 2 years short, the last 2 years of funding are being spent already, and so we will not have 2 years worth of replacement buses. We do need to trade off how many replacement buses we need to buy in order to assure reliability in the existing fleet versus how much expansion we want to do. And I would certainly like to see some answer as to what that trade-off is and where you stand on that.
Again, I would say the bus network evaluation adoption or acceptance is an authorization to come to you with exactly the analysis that you're requesting.
Okay. I'm just raising the fact that we do have an issue here.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right.
If we spend this money, then it is not available for replacement buses, which is an option that we might otherwise have.
Madam Chair, can I ask just a refinement to that question? I want to kind of. So, are we saying that in the analysis you bring back, you're going to give us a sense? Because one of the things I heard is that we're going to have longer lifetimes associated with existing buses because less wear and tear, fewer stops. Also, we won't need to purchase additional buses. So, you're going to give us kind of a net. Okay, if we implement on this corridor, we'll need to buy X fewer buses to maintain the service reliability of the existing fleet, and we will save X millions of dollars on additional bus purchases. Is that what you're talking about?
Okay, and just divide it again. The bus network evaluation adoption is purely administrative.
Okay.
It says if you want to buy expansion buses as the way of getting more buses on the corridors, you've got plans for it, then you can do that. The next question is, how will you get both the buses you need on the corridors you have? You can buy new expansion buses. You can increase the average age of the buses that you have right now and take buses that you're purchasing and put newer buses on those fleets. We want to maintain the average age of the fleet at the board target of seven and a half years. But there will be options for you in how you get the buses to the routes that you want. But we won't have the same set of options if we don't adopt the bus network evaluation. And to go back again, I mean Jim talked about this earlier, but when Metro Matters was adopted, we were told you can purchase 185 expansion buses if you demonstrate that there's a need for them. And the bus network evaluation addresses that very narrow question: is there a need for 185 expansion buses? And the answer is yes. You agree with that, then we're just stating that there is a need in the region for buses to serve new growth. How we get them and deploy them is the question subsequent that Mr. Benjamin asked.
And I guess one of the issues that Mr. Monami has opened up here is the issue of, do you want to change the board policy on average fleet age? And if so, what effect will that have on reliability? That is one of the possibilities in doing both, but one of the concerns we have to look at very, very positively is, what are we doing to all of our service as we move into a direction like this, and what is happening when we don't have enough money to replace the buses in the time period that we said we were going to do so. And so that trade-off becomes a very important one, and one that we have to do consciously, not just sort of say, this is good and this is good, so we'll just prove this and just prove that, and not look at what the implications of each one would be. So I understand now that what we're talking about initially is a concept approval, but that you understand, we understand, that there is a substantial amount of thought that needs to go into, we've got money for 135 buses that's available, should they all be for expansion purposes or not? And how would we use that?
The second part of that, I'm sorry,
the second part of my issues is we are talking here about all regional services, I presume, right? Everything we've looked at, all these corridors are regional services. There was a proposal within the FY09 budget to take a number of demonstration projects and turn them into regional services, and I think that was a perfectly reasonable one. We did, in the last meeting of the Finance Committee, give you instructions as to what the upper limits on subsidies ought to be. And we also gave you some instructions relative to the 30s line and supervisors and stuff like that. And I think one of the other issues is that if we're going to be moving in this direction of more and more regional services, we ought to at least be able to accommodate the switch of those projects into the FY09 budget as regional projects and regional services within the constraints that we provided. So I just wanted to let you know that I think that's a consistency that ought to be here in all of the actions that we're taking. Otherwise, you're adding regional services and you haven't even taken care of ones that we've been running for several years.
I wanted to note that, well, while we're looking to the June timeframe for the 135 approval process to move forward on the bus purchase, I think the other part that is going to, we're going out with a plan, and we are going to ask for final refining of that plan. And one part of that is the financial aspect. And I think if we go back to slide whatever, on page 20, that approval is the September timeframe when we come back to look at the network then being reflected by that financial piece. There are pieces here that are both capital and operational that will be part of that. And I think it's that time frame that we will have this discussion.
Yes, it's also going to be during that time frame we're going to come out with our overall capital needs, sort of what happens after 2010 and 2015. So you heard the rail portion, you hear the bus portion, you put all of that in there. We're going to come back and say these are overall needs, so it's going to be even more complicated because it's you know, there's only so much money, there's a lot of needs, and that's what we want to lay out for you and start that policy decision. If I can also talk about the need for the 135 buses is, you know, it's not all 1 year. How much of that gets put off beyond the first 2 years? How much is in the first 2 years? So that is something we also need to be back. Without adopting that evaluation network, we can't buy one expansion bus. So it's kind of, we got to lay it all out. We've got to get past the hurdle, and then we got to say, this is what we really need.
Mr. Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. The list that you have on page 26, that's your recommended priority at this time. This is an information item, as I understand it.
Yes, it is.
When it comes back for an action item, what type of process do you propose in terms of meeting the jurisdictions to determine whether or not any route can be added to or deleted from this list? Because I heard Mr. Hughes say that at least there was some disagreement with the JCCs about this list and staff, and some of the jurisdictions may have some ideas about a couple of routes on the list that we may want to massage between now and the action item meeting. So how do we do that?
Right. I mean, I guess the answer is, I mean, this is sort of like a 6-year capital program. I mean, you're pretty certain about year one. You're very certain about year one, and pretty certain about year two. But years three through six can vary depending on how conditions change. But project can go slowly or quickly. Price of steel goes up. Priorities change. This is a 6-year plan. We started on the first three in the year one, but there's a lot of flexibility in what happens, and we would expect to be coming back to you annually about what the upcoming years are and revising this on an annual basis. Things change in corridors. If in the Central Avenue corridor we get a number of large development proposals and we start seeing that this is something that we really need to, it's part of the marketing and positioning of those projects, then we would be, we might add or develop a new service to respond to and support growth. So it's flexible, and I would expect it would be like a capital program where you've always got a six-year plan, but you're annually updating.
And but there's not much flexibility before it becomes an action item. There's flexibility in the years going out, changing the years that are projected, but not the, I guess, the first year that you're looking at now, and maybe the second year, 5, 6, and 7.
I think by the time we get to the first year, we would have worked with the local jurisdictions an agreement on what should occur in the first year. But you're absolutely right, and I understand what you're saying with this. And as Nat said, as we see new quarters developing, and development is happening far more rapidly on those quarters than we initially planned, we will work with the jurisdictions to coordinate that and provide direction. It doesn't make sense, for an example, if there's a quarter up here that development has slowed on and declined, and there's one that's fully increased, for us to continue with the plan just because we put in the original plan. It has to be a living plan. But the basic concepts of it and what we see today, we have to have some roadmap and where to go.
And that is, of course, one of the questions for the board is the level of aggressiveness on this, because we put it forward right now at 3 to 4 a year, which is, you know, one level of move forward, but we could move forward more quickly if the board were to direct us to move forward more quickly. And I guess the most recent example, and the National Harbor One, NH1, is something that came together very quickly in response to a pressing development need in Prince George's County. And so, I mean, I think that's evidence of how quickly those things can become priorities, be developed, and be deployed.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam.
Mr. McKay.
Yeah, thank you. Just a question. How, help me understand how the interfaces between the implemented routes on this chart and the priorities of starting new routes. Because we heard a lot. I mean, if I look at, you know, page 13 and look at the challenges faced by bus service, those challenges that are on that page already exist for the priority corridors that we have already implemented. So, you know, the crowding, the slowing travel speeds, route and schedule adherence, those are issues that, you know, we experience every day on the Rex bus system. And in fact, I was sharing with Chris this morning that I had 3 Rex buses come by before I could get on one because they were full. So two questions. One, how are we looking at going back and adjusting ones we've already implemented as a part of what's going to be coming to us in June? And the second question I have related to that is, when we look at these corridors and I look at the figures shown for average weekday ridership, for example, the Rex is 3305, are we taking into consideration parallel bus service that already exists on those routes and what the impact on that parallel bus system might be, so that we get an idea for what the entire corridor ridership levels are instead of them just...
Absolutely. When we did the service plan for the J's between Bethesda and College Park, we're explicitly including the ride-on routes that were part of that. And so in any study that we do with Metrobus, we would be thinking about the totality of transit services available in the corridor and rationalizing the way that those work together and working with the local transit providers.
The other thing I'll add is, when we implement the service, we're not done. You know, things happen, things change. We did do Columbia Pike. We're now looking at, you know, are there changes we should make about how much service goes to the Pentagon versus Pentagon City. Those types of things continue to go on because things happen. So you got a nice implementation day. We did Georgia Avenue a year ago. We just added, but we're still not done. It's still going to require changes and feedback and more improvements to Georgia Avenue. Now we're getting complaints of it's overcrowded. So I got to go back and look at that. That's the nature of bus. It, you're never done.
Right. And I just wanted to make sure that was clear, because I think that's very important. We don't want to lose the momentum on some of the routes that we've already existed as we look forward to implementing others. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Madam Chair, just a quick question. I think this maybe gets at some of the last two sets of questions. Has staff seen the criteria units identified as priority routes? I think that's kind of at the heart of what we're asking. Have we considered all these other variables and factors that have concerned us? Has that been shared yet? The criteria, how did we choose these 24 routes?
Okay.
I'm not sure that all of the jurisdictions have seen, you know, here's all the criteria, here's the, you know, the 30 corridors that we looked at against that. I can make that available to them. We'll make that available to them before the final plan is put in there to see where it is. Some of the criteria is very quantifiable. How many riders do we have and what the frequency is? Some of it is not. What's the jurisdiction? What are we doing in terms of reliability? But we have something that we can share.
Thank you. I think that would be helpful, just to give us all some sense of involvement and interaction with staff and working.
Okay, we'll do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've also looked at things like you mentioned earlier, like BRAC, the growth that is expected to come from BRAC, and the criteria, I guess, may vary somewhat. There are a number of different factors, but it may vary for some of these routes, I would imagine. And I looked at some, and I can see some of the land use things in here. I see National Harbor. I see down here at the bottom on Route 24, Jamal, that's scheduled for 2012 right now, which is likely to tie in with Conterra. I can see a number of the other factors that are under consideration. And I guess I was following up on Mr. Solomon's question that as long as you continue to work with the jurisdictions on the land use component, that would help tremendously. And I see you working with COG. And since everyone else has said this too, particularly starting with Mr. Zimmerman, he said in his 10 years he's never seen a presentation this thorough and this great on bus service. I don't have that same frame of reference, but I know a good presentation when I hear one. I thought it was very, very good covered a lot of territory. So thank you very much.
If I can reiterate the commitment, I'll work with the jurisdictions before we come with a final plan. This is where it is. This is sort of what I wanted to hear. Why aren't we moving some up? Why aren't we adding some stuff to it? So this is a good news story from my perspective in terms of that. The reaction is positive. This is where we should be going. It's not going to become an easy decision about which ones go first. We'll present something, and as Nat said, the first year we ought to lock into, and then we'll come back every year and we'll reprioritize what's beyond that based on the development.
Mr. Hughes, I think one other part that I think is very critical for those of us with other bus services there, that coordination is very comprehensive, because I think what I heard from this is that this is a regional approach of doing this, as well as the comprehensive alternative of bus service. And as we in the region try and add additional bus service with the same philosophy of complementing other transportation alternatives that we have, that we make sure that the Metro bus and the other systems can hopefully look in the planning as complete or transparent systems to the customers, because that's going to be the important part of making what we hope we're doing, and that is moving people, goods and services too sometimes, in a way that is efficient and most importantly accessible. One of the things that we've learned is that in an area where people frequently are not attuned to using buses, we're at a climate in which we're understanding that people will take buses, will use buses, and will do so when it's effective in terms of the service they need and accessible. And so all of the things that you talked about are so critical that we work together on. I believe that really we offer a greater alternative to our rail riders, not just adding those others. Folks who have found that they change two lines because they think that they can only get from point A to point B by doing that they actually may have an alternative, that they can use a bus service that can get them quicker to their point A and point B. So those are some of the comments I had, but I think it's an exceptional presentation, and we look forward to the 8th with the review coming back to us. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think your last point is an important one. We have found that one of the things that we added, you see, on the, you know, that was shown with the Columbia Pike 16 lines, most of it is service that either goes to the Pentagon or Pentagon City. But we did add a service of the 16Y, which goes all the way downtown to Farragut Square. And that was sort of an experiment some years ago, because I had people telling me, you know, I'd really rather not transfer at the Pentagon and take the train. I would take a direct bus, and I'm happy to ride the bus all the way because I'm riding the train anyway. And so we tried that, and the response was so big that the only complaint was that there weren't enough buses, so we added some more buses. And it got more popular, and then people said, this is great, but you need more buses, so we added more buses. And then we needed more buses, and so we added more buses. And then I think it's at least 5 times now.
Something like that.
I mean, and
I mostly get no complaints except for the fact that they'd like a few more buses on this line. I mean, we had no idea how much latent demand there was for this service. And that's one of the things that leads to one of the questions I'm going to ask about the analysis so far. There actually are people who will ride the bus. It turns out if you make the service, you know, good for them in terms of taking them where they need to go in a reasonable amount of time. But that does lead to a couple of questions that I have. One of which is that in looking at the routes, it seems to me, Mr. Hughes, that you've done something very reasonable, which is you looked at the routes and said, where are the places we already have a pretty high level of service? And you found that 14% of the routes have half the riders. Did I get that right? And in a sense, we were doing that with the very first route, you know, Columbia Pike. That was not only the busiest route in my county, it was the heaviest ridership of any route in the Commonwealth. It was about 9,500 riders a day. As you can see from the table there, it's now up to 12.5. And that's actually more than that, because when we did Pike Ride, we also added BART route service, our local bus service, as part of that package. And so we're somewhere like 14,000 a day. So that's a substantial growth in, you know, like 5 years. So that's a reasonable way to proceed. On the other hand, what it leaves us not knowing is, to what degree is it that the routes that are really, you know, carrying a lot of riders now are actually the ones we're providing the best service on to start with? Because the fact of the matter is, although Columbia Pike service is tremendously better than it used to be, before we started this, it was better than anywhere else we had in the county. So one of the things you don't know is, with a new service, you know, is there a ridership for it? We used to not have any service that connected, for instance, the west end of my county, up Columbia Pike on the south side, with the Carter and the eastern point. And we created a local bus route, an ART route, you know, when we put it out there, we didn't have any data to show, really, how many people were going to ride it. Had a pretty strong gut feeling that a lot of people needed to make that. And that has been the most phenomenal route ever. It is carrying about, I think, a third of the ridership of our whole system. And you know, it's now something like 1,800 riders a day or something like that on this one route. My point is, that was a route we didn't have any data to tell us what the ridership was, but that's, it turned out to be tremendous. So one of the things that concerns me a little bit is that in all those other routes, there may be places where it really would have a lot of potential, but we'd have no way of knowing that now. And let me go back to one of the very first pictures. I guess it's on the 12th, slide number 12, where the presentation was demonstrating the, you know, relative farther reach of bus service than rail service. And it, you know, it's showing where bus stops are, and of course it covers a greater area. That's a useful thing to know. But of course, what it doesn't tell us is really what the level of service is there, because everywhere there's a rail, the rail dots, the dark dots, everyone sitting here knows exactly what kind of service that is. And, you know, you don't ever have to wait very long, even when you're real off peak. You know, if things are running right, you know, you're not going to wait much more than 12 minutes, you know, ever. On the other hand, those dots all over the place have very different frequencies associated with them. There are dots on that chart right there that actually don't exist some of the days of the week, because many of them on Saturday and Sunday really should disappear. And, you know, it's hard to convey that in one picture. It's not a criticism. But actually, I do think we need to develop a measure that tells us something. Because if you implement everything that's recommended here, that chart doesn't change necessarily. In fact, it might even have fewer stops in some cases. But you would have increased service tremendously, but you don't capture that way. So we need to find a vocabulary and a way of representing the level of bus service so we can get a better picture of what the network really is. I don't have an answer for that, but I think it's part of what we need to be able to do. And we need to find some ways, and I think this is some of the comments, you know, you're going to get as you go around, that there are places where the bus service, you know, might have tremendous potential if we had significantly better service, and it's going to be hard to know that. One of the things that wasn't mentioned, I don't think, in the discussion today, but I think is part of this, we've talked about frequency and reliability and that kind of thing, improving the time by improving runway and all that. But there is one other characteristic, if we want to get people who, you know, some of whom thought they'd never get on a bus to think they will, and that is the quality of the vehicle itself. As I've said before, the quality of our bus fleet right now is substantially better than it was a decade ago. Not only that it's just plain newer, but because the buses we get have improved in a number of ways. We have lots of low-floor buses now, and we didn't have any, you know, a decade ago. nonetheless, if you get on a bus in Europe, you know, just take a look around. And what the standard is expected in most European cities is something Americans don't see. And I do think that makes a difference. And I happened to see a bus that was going through our town on its way from Altoona testing back to the plant this past week. And staff asked me if I wanted to take a look on it, and so I took a look at it. And, you know, the main difference between it and any other roughly 40-foot bus that we have is, that you could see as a customer, is the finish on the inside. You know, things like the windows. I mean, there's a lot of glass, so it's very visible in and out, which makes you feel different. You can look straight out when you're on the bus and read the sign rather than having to duck down. But it's also, if you get onto the typical American bus, including most of ours, the whole window treatment is, you know, unattractive, and also I think tending to collect dirt and all. Whereas on this bus, like those I've seen in Germany, for instance, you have completely smooth finish, more like what you would expect in the car you paid a lot of money for. And, you know, I think these are non-trivial. I think that when people have a choice to get on a vehicle, you know, there were studies done, I heard some marketing people, some analysis about, you know, what influenced people's willingness to get on various kinds of transit or at all. And one of the factors was, you know, is this me? Mm-hmm. And, you know, people would look at a rail car and some new system, and, you know, yes, they could identify with that. But they'll show them a bus, and they didn't have that kind of identification. And if they get on something and it feels like it's, you know, really a social service conveyance for the unfortunate, then that's going to be a turnoff to a lot of people who have a choice. So I think we do have to pay some attention to this. Of course, getting the American bus industry to produce the vehicles we want, I know, has been a struggle for some years. They're only starting to do it. The same companies that produce these in Europe own the companies that produce them here, but we're not willing to do that. So I think that's changing. And I say, one of the first places I saw anything like that go into service was in L.A.
Yes.
And Mr. Cato, if you want to say anything to this.
I do. I'd like to say something to that as well as a few other components. Mr. Zimmerman is absolutely correct. The image of what we provide has a major impact on people using the services. As a result, the new vehicles coming in, including the 60-foot articulated buses, have that design that Mr. Zimmerman mentioned. All future buses ordered by the agency, at least the last ones, have what's called a BRT look. Really, it's a look that was designed in Europe a few years ago. It's a much more attractive vehicle from an external standpoint as well as an internal standpoint. And we're going to, as I have mentioned earlier, roll out the new color schemes for the agency. We have an image that's over 30 years old and it's dated. And we need to change that from a bus design as well as the color of the vehicle itself. Having said that, there's other components that's going to impact this as well as the existing services that we operate, and that is, how do we manage these services? I've been out talking to employees, well, since I've been here, but in the last few months talking about this effort, and there's a great deal of enthusiasm, the same degree that Jim demonstrated this morning on behalf of the mechanics, the cleaners, as well as the operators. And when we talk about this, the key will be the supervision. And I met with supervisors last week, and we will be bringing you the assessment of operations later this year. We're going to really move to the past to focus on the future. And what I mean by that is we're going to go back to the role of supervisors having the responsibility of bus routes and operators. And their job is to improve service, not just to write down information that comes to me or some other managers. That's a major transformation of how we're going to manage our services. We're going to utilize the technology that we've purchased and the bus control centers to maximize its effectiveness in managing this system. And we're going to use technology from the standpoint of NextBus as it rolls out, again, to provide information that's similar to the information that's provided in the rail system. And from a marketing perspective, we will provide information, again, on the range of services that we have. And a real good example of what could happen, I've received feedback from individuals and reading from different websites, how people are realizing you can take the bus to go to the Nets game, or you can take a bus from a different station to get to the game and you have a better ride. People are starting to see that, and we will market that more as we move forward. So it's image, it's management, it's using the resources that we have today, and as I said, in some cases, stepping back to how we used to do it to move forward. So there's a lot of steps in this process.
Well, let me follow up on that because that gets to another thing I want to ask about. It seems like this would move us to some kind of hierarchy of services or a defined package of services with, you know, we don't necessarily have labels for it yet, and some of the labels we have used before might have to be reordered. I mean, for instance, we have a service we call Express Service, but that had a particular meaning within Metrobus, as opposed to limited stop service, which is a different kind of thing, as opposed to kind of regular service. And then average customer probably doesn't know much about what those are. I mean, it wasn't, you'll say it on the bus, and if you ride that route, it may mean something to you, but it isn't part of the general understanding of, you know, kind of what the product is that we offer. It sounded to me like if we were to implement all this, what you imagine is something that there is a particular kind of a service and some kind of differentiation. And let me say, for instance, when we created the new service on the 16 line, we gave it a name, in part because we wanted to be able to tell people it's something different now. And that's why the Pike Ride logo was developed and all that. And then when they followed up on Route 1 and they created Rex, again, they were trying to tell the customer, look, we're actually doing something different here. Come take a look. And after a while, people found, yeah, it is, and it works and all, and a lot more people use it. In the end, we probably don't want to have, you know, 24 different things all over the place. Let me be the first to say that while, you know, many of us are very invested in the whole Pike Ride thing, I do believe there's a point at which it'll be appropriate if we get a regional agreement on something to brand it in a way that makes it the same kind of service that you get in this other card and all. And then it's more likely people will know that there's this kind of bus service and that kind of bus service. Again, to go back to L.A., I visited there a number of years ago, and I quickly came to understand that the regular local bus service had yellow buses, or gold color, whatever you want to call them. What's that?
California poppy.
California poppy, excuse me. No offense intended. But it's my Eastern eyes, because it's more or less a yellow color.
Okay, it is.
And then they had what they called Metro Rapid, which was what I was there really there to look at, which had red buses.
Yes.
Which was a more express service. It's not, maybe not the right word, but the point is it was a specific kind of service that had fewer stops, had managed headways with signal prioritization, and, you know, very high volumes, and really was one of the things we were looking at when we were trying to figure out what to do here back then. And then they were working on implementing a third thing, which you could call BRT, because they explained that Metro Rapid is not BRT, and they weren't calling it BRT. It didn't run on exclusive right-of-way, but it was very efficient service. And BRT, you know, had its own, you know, livery and,
yes,
and all that.
Colors.
And so you could quickly understand, even if someone coming out of town, what the choices were. The yellow bus stopped very frequently. There were more limited stops for the red bus, and you could get on and off once. So if you weren't close to the stop where the Metro Rapid was, you could take a bus a few stops, get on, wait for that one, and that one would be coming fairly frequently and would take you a longer distance. So it was easy to comprehend. It seems to me that that's sort of the direction we have to move if we're going to have any, so people anywhere in the region would know what they're getting.
You're absolutely right, and that is the direction that we are going to move. There will be a color scheme for the local services, and those limited stop express services, we're looking right now at the Metro Extra colors because that's one that people understand. It's a different type of services. And as we get to the future, just as you mentioned in Los Angeles, it was silver, by the way, for the BRT that was a dedicated right-of-way, that we would identify a color scheme for that. So the public then, as you said, it becomes very clear. It's easier to market, easier to understand. You see a color coming in the street, you know exactly what type of service is coming. And that's the intent that we will go forward here in Washington. Washington area.
When I was there, I remember talking to the folks who were running Metro Rapid at the time, and they told me that the tremendous increase in performance that they got, and basically what they were trying to do was get more service out there with the same number of buses, because they didn't have more buses, so they had to cycle them through more quickly. This goes back to what Mr. Hughes was saying. And they told me that they got it three ways, and they sort of had a percentage, and I'm trying to remember, single prioritization was one thing. That,
yes.
Improved it, reducing the number of stops,
yes,
spacing them out with another. I can't remember what the third one was.
Free running time of the vehicles. It was not really a schedule, just each bus left the terminal point two or three minutes apart, but the running time was free. Running time was based upon the ability to move.
So just imagining the headway but running in the service, yeah, as opposed to a scheduled stop. And they knew how much they had gotten from each of those. But together, they got a significant reduction in the amount of time it took to get across Los Angeles. The last thing, of course, which makes the ultimate improvement is the running way changes, like having an exclusive lane or a queue jumper or something like that. And that I think is... I want to go back to what Mr. Hughes was saying about that, because... And Mr. Bodenheimer, that people won't necessarily... You know, there's some things aren't intuitive. And so part of the reason we never talk about that, we had bus lanes that are gone now and it's very hard to get any, is because people automatically think it's going to hurt traffic. Those who are driving think it's going to make life harder for them. And even people that aren't in that lane just think, well, okay, it's got to be a bad thing, right? We lose then. And number one, that means we're not thinking in terms of the number of people that are moving in the corridor. We're thinking about vehicles. But number two, it's not necessarily the case, because, as was suggested, you know, it's been shown a number of places that you can actually have the non-riders benefit directly, too. Sometimes the car flow improves because you're removing so many vehicles when you have a heavy level of service that is taking, you know, 30 or 40 people in a conveyance. We need to find ways to model that and demonstrate that, because I think once we do it successfully somewhere, you know, there'll be a realization of this. But the hardest thing is to get any of this done the first time. So we need some ways to do that, and in the first place, we're going to have, you know, some quantitative measures that show, look what you would really accomplish if you were doing this. And I think that's one of the challenges for us in selling the whole thing, is making people understand that there really is a tremendous benefit that will spread out, not only to people who happen to be on the bus, but many others as well. And that's where the conversation in particular with the Departments of Transportation in each state and locality are especially important. We'll do it for me this morning. Thank you.
Well, very comprehensive, Mr. Zimmerman. I think you may have brought us to the conclusion.
Yes,
Mr. Chairman, just have one other reaction. And I said we've done a lot of studies. This includes recommendations for all of our bus routes in terms of what's out there. And the bus route evaluation says we need 135 buses. Talks about corridors that aren't here. So as we bring that out and we roll it out between now and September, you'll hear a lot of those. It's not that we think this is the only place that bus needs to be improved all over. This is just one piece of an overall plan.
And also, I mean, examples of this level of detail on the service plans we've done before, again, referring back to the study that Jay's, we identified as part of that service plan four intersections that could benefit from queue jumpers, and we did concept sketches of those. And one of the things that we have not done yet, but we need to do, is communicate that formally to the Maryland State Highway Administration and say, you know, this is something we've identified as a need. We'd like you to add it to your highway needs inventory and put it out there, so that then, you know, decision makers are in a position to advocate for something that is then in their inventory of needs. So a feature of all of our service plans would be identifying the roadway improvements, and to the extent that we can do that, to quantify the benefits that result from that as well, so that there's a statement of pros and cons associated with this, and hopefully it's net positive.
Thank you. Just one minor comment, just to add to what Chris was saying about the aesthetics of the buses and the quality of them. We can't lose sight of the aesthetics and the quality of the areas passengers are waiting for the buses on either, because one critical component with the rec system is not only the difference in bus, but you know a rec stop, right, because it has a quality bus shelter, and that's one of the things that long-term can help identify some of the routes too, not just the quality of the bus, but also think about the conditions the passenger is waiting in the elements to try to encourage that ridership. I think it's an integral part of the relationship with the DOTs and the right-of-ways, not just how do we move buses faster, but what happens to the passengers while they're waiting as well.
And I want to describe a program that I think every local jurisdiction in the region could benefit from learning a little bit more about. Montgomery County Ride-On has a program that's managed by a guy named Jeff Dunkel, which is a bus stop improvement program. They've taken the information that's available in the region's bus stop database. Actually, Montgomery County, I think, was the first to put the database together. But they have been funded by the Montgomery County Council to make bus stop improvements, to make them ADA. The basic reason is to make them all ADA compliant. But they have an incredible ability to deploy different design tools in the field
to not only meet the ADA need, but also to do traffic calming and to improve accessibility. I went out with their team on a stretch of road in Montgomery County recently, and in the stretch of a mile, they came up with at least four different designs. This is a design build, they field design it, and then, they, you know, at an average cost of $3,700 per bus stop, they design new landing pads, they put in islands in the middle of the road. It's just terrific. It's interdisciplinary. They had planners there. They had people from the state. They had me. They had the consultants there. And it was just, they go out, they design it, they put spray marks on, you know, they spray lines on the street, and, you know, a little while later they come out and they actually construct the improvements. And it's fantastic. They gave a presentation at the pedestrian safety conference, and really the thing that comes through is the number of tools that they have and the dynamism of that team. I would strongly suggest that everyone can go along with the team on one of those things if they have a chance.
I'll be very brief, Madam Chair. One, I wanted to thank WMATA staff for the work on the 30s line. I think I know all of us have been to public hearings before, but I think you guys did an exceptional job of working very closely with the community along that corridor. I think as we go out for other public hearings on this topic, I think all the issues that the Chair brought up in terms of not just the service and the routes, but all the elements, all the amenities we're talking about, it's important. I think our ridership base will eat this stuff up. They'll love it. They want to hear about it. They'll have thoughts. They'll have comments. I'd encourage you to include all the topics we talked about in presentations so far.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just one short final statement. Mm-hmm. To get back to the comments you made, Mr. Zimmerman, about being able to portray this. I saw a picture a few weeks ago by one of Mr. Monomay's staff members that showed a street in Washington, D.C. They had 40 cars in the street, and it was very congested. The next shot was that same street with a bus on it, and it was just one bus, and it was how open it was. And I think that was a very powerful statement in the type of thing that we will use the details, specifics, and analysis, but we also need to use images to demonstrate what we're talking about. And that was a very effective image.
Well, Mr. Cato, the next image, the next progression of that image is that as those cars move away and the addition of those buses increase in that corridor, that's the next line that you see, and that continues to reduce it. So I think it was a very good presentation. I just want to make one comment in concluding, is that those improvements really do broadly affect the community, and most importantly, the accessible, the community looking for accessibility. And we see a change in the demand that's needed for Metro Access by folks who have accessible buses, low floors everywhere you go, and more people are using them. So it contributes in a different way to the population that we want to serve throughout, be it the social aspect of it or the disability aspect. So
yes.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Hearing nothing in addition, we're adjourned.